Our next case is number 212310, Intelligent Investments, Inc. v. United States. Okay, Mr. Fleischhaker.
Please, the court. Raul Gonzalez, who is basically the chief executive officer and only employee of Intelligent Investments, is a service-disabled veteran. And the significance of that fact is twofold. Number one, had he not been a service-disabled veteran, he would never have gotten the contract and we wouldn't be here. Secondly, it is this disability that contributed to the delays and the interruptions in discovery. And it's our position that the abuse of discretion on the part of the judge below is that she did not take into consideration in making that decision the effect of his disability.
Okay, one thing that seems to me is missing from the record, and that is, if I'm correct about it, any medical evidence that his condition prevented him from responding to the discovery request.
Well, the only part of the record in that respect is twofold, was an email that I sent to Mr. Bigler that is in the record that indicated that he was experiencing problems responding to the additional request. When the trial judge ordered us to go ahead and go through the documents, go through these boxes of documents piecemeal, and I was trying to get Mr. Gonzalez to come into my office, and we're in the middle of the pandemic. He suffers from respiratory conditions, and I advised at that time that I was having difficulty getting him into my office because of those difficulties, and I had received information from his wife to that effect. Now, obviously, the trial judge didn't know about that at the time. However, when I did finally submit my motion for stay, I fault myself for not perhaps recognizing that and sitting down with my client and saying, well, you've got to get these things answered, and not recognizing the fact that the reason he wasn't coming into my office was because of his PTSD and his fear of infection from the pandemic and so forth.
That all may be true, but the concern that I'm expressing is that there isn't any medical evidence in the record to support that.
Well, when I filed the motion for stay, it was accompanied by the statement from his psychologist at the VA that at that point in time he was not able to.
Okay, where do I find that in the record?
It's referred to in the motion for stay. I quoted it. Figure out where that is in the record here for a minute. The motion to stay is starts at Appendix 151, and quoted in there.
156, paragraph 17.
Yes, that's the communication from the psychologist. And at that point, I was asking for additional time to obtain the medical documentation that I needed to find out.
I'm trying to understand the time frame of this statement in relation to the various failures to respond to discovery. When is the treating psychologist's statement in the course of this time period?
It came after.
So this stay request was June of 2021.
Well, if you read the, on May 14th, I had requested that, and I'm going back to paragraph 12 of the motion for stay,
of May 14th, I had asked him, he made an appointment to come see me to go through these documents in order to provide the response to the request for production. He called me that day and said he was suffering from some, that he couldn't come in. It was at that point that it dawned on me that he was suffering from some kind of depression that was keeping him from coming in to see me. I indicated I emailed his wife at that time. She responded that he's in the emergency room suffering from medical conditions. At that point, I advised, paragraph 18, I advised that I would need to come up with some medical documentation. And thereafter, I was provided with the letter from the VA doctor, from the psychologist, indicating his condition. And paragraph 18, I said, based on the contents of Exhibit A, it would be necessary for counsel to obtain a medical release and get a more complete explanation from his treating psychologist. At that point, I was requesting a 60-day stay to try to further document that medical condition.
Mm-hmm.
And
possibly the record might have been elaborated had there been a motion to dismiss that was ruled on, as opposed to it being sua sponte.
The motion to dismiss had been...
I intended that as a helpful question.
I'm sorry?
I intended that as a helpful question.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there had been a motion to dismiss, had been filed earlier, had been overruled. I mean, the court had denied it. And I understand.
Isn't part of the problem here that this stuff we're now talking about is in May and June of 2021, but in response to the government's earlier motion to dismiss, in January you stated in your response that you'd already met with Mr. Gonzalez and you looked at the documents and that you were prepared to respond to the government's discovery request. Well, isn't there an inconsistency there between what you told the court in January and then saying, oh, well, I haven't met with him, I can't to go through the documents, and he has a medical issue that prohibits him from coming in to go to the documents? Sounds like you told the court, in order to get the actual motion to dismiss for failure of prosecution denied, that you'd already done that. But it apparently you hadn't, or at least you didn't follow through on your statement, and it's at 105 that having met with RG, counsel is now in a position to respond to defend his discovery request.
Perhaps I took an error in terminology. When I said we reviewed, I went over the files with him and asked him what was in the files. Are there documents responsive to this? And then I followed up with that, and I answered the request for production saying all of this information is in the termination compensation document, the termination for convenience settlement proposal. And my response to the request for production is none of these documents are in here. They're all in this 450-page settlement submission.
Wait, so are you now saying that everything in that 10 boxes was unresponsive to the government's discovery requests?
That's what I understood from my client, that it was all of those documents were summarized in the request for settlement. And that's what Mr. Balk told me, and that was in my letter when I sent the letter to the attorneys.
Did you review the documents in those boxes?
No, I didn't go through the documents.
Well, how
boxes.
Can you make representations about what the documents are as counsel when you didn't personally review them?
Well, I was relying on my client's statement that these are, you know, these are the receipts, these are the weight bills, these are, and specifically what they were looking for, and what the judge asked me to go back and look for specifically were documents. They were looking for smoking guns, indicating that my client had somehow
engaged in some kind of communications, improper communications amounting to fraud. And
you didn't attempt to perform that review and look through those documents yourself to determine whether there was anything responsive, even after telling the court in January that you could.
When I said review, my statement to review was, with my client, what's in these boxes? And he told me what was in the boxes, and my response to the request for production and my letter of April 13th, 2021 to counsel stated the reason that we had responded the way we had was I was relying on the expert witness's statement to me that there was nothing in those boxes that wasn't included in the termination settlement request, that those were just foundational documents for that. If my statement to the court that I had, I reviewed them, I didn't intend to mislead the court. I did not intend to say I've gone through these 13 pages of documents page by page. I reviewed them with my client. I said, what's in these boxes? I was told.
Can you just clarify that when the settlement proposal, did that merely refer to documents or attach documents?
They did not attach those documents. Was it summarized those documents?
Was the request a request for production of the documents?
The request for production of documents was very broad, basically wanted to see every single piece of paper that was relied on.
So a summary of them would not have been responsive to a request for the documents, even if those documents were fully summarized. Is that right?
That's right. I guess I could have copied 12 boxes worth of thousands of pages and sent them in and said, instead I made the offer, you can send somebody out here to review all these boxes and see if you find something in there, you're certainly entitled to have it. The court felt that response was not sufficient, and I understand that. And I understood the court's order to go back and go through those documents piece by those boxes piece by piece and look for those. And that's what I was trying to get my client up to do when I became aware that he was suffering from severe psychological problems at that point in time. At the telephone conference with the judge, and that transcript is part of the record, I told the judge, I did not go through every single box. I don't think I'm required to go through every single box and look through every single page to comply with that discovery request. Well, she disagreed with me, and she ordered basically for us to do that. And that's what I attempted to do when my client became disabled. I advised the court of that fact in the motion for stay, and my position, it was an abuse of discretion not to give me that additional time to try to document whether or not my client was even going to be able to respond to these. Obviously, if he couldn't have, then we would have had to dismiss the lawsuit, because I don't think I could prove it any other way. But I at least wanted time to find out if he could be restored to a sufficient level of not having depression that he could come in and go through those boxes piece by piece with me. And certainly, after, if the court misunderstood my representation in January to mean that I had gone through those boxes piece by piece, when we had the telephone conference with the judge, it was clear to her at that point in time that I had not gone through those documents piece by piece, and I told her that I had not gone by them, and I didn't think I was required to do that. So I don't believe I misled the court in any way, certainly not after we had that telephone conference. It was clear at that point that I had not. So,
and that was substantially before the sua sponte dismissal.
Yes, I can't remember.
A few months before.
Yeah.
Or a month before.
I think the telephone conference was in March or
I think that's when she told me to respond by May 15th. So, thank you.
Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Bigler?
May it please the court. The court should affirm the trial court's dismissal.
So the problem here is this. It seems to me that there was a failure to comply with discovery requests under Rule 37 and that some sanction would have been appropriate. But as I understand the Société Générale case and subsequent circuit cases, if somebody fails to comply because of health problems, you can't dismiss simply on that basis. You have to find some lack of good faith or something like that. Correct?
No, that's not my reading of the rule, Your Honor. The rule states that if the orders aren't, it actually says if an order is not complied with, that the court can take those actions that are listed in Rule 37, one of which is...
But that the Société Générale case says that that's not true, that the mere failure to comply is not a basis for imposing a sanction of dismissal, that there has to be something willful or bad faith about it. And I'm having difficulty seeing here where the willfulness or bad faith comes into play.
There was not a finding of willfulness or bad faith, but I think the issue is, was there fault? And there was fault. Plaintiff, in this case, the appellant, who was the plaintiff below, had the ability to comply with the court's orders, was given, I extended their time to respond to our document requests, 150 days. They failed to respond within that time. They failed to respond to my correspondence. And that's when I filed the motion to dismiss for failure to prosecute, which they also didn't respond to. The court then entered a show cause order and then denied my motion for failure to prosecute, but gave them another 30 days to respond to the discovery, and they failed to meet that March 8th, 2021 deadline. And then when they did provide the responses on March 12th, for example, the document request, they simply referred to their cost proposal, which had already been in our possession. It shouldn't have taken them 11 months to develop document responses that could have been put together in an hour. They didn't object to a single request.
Were you contending that there was evidence here of willfulness or bad faith?
I am not, but what I'm saying is that the court gave them numerous warnings, numerous orders to comply, and they failed to do so.
But there's no question a sanction was appropriate. The question is whether we can sustain a sanction of dismissal under these circumstances.
Well, for example, in this court's decision in United Construction Products versus Tile Technologies, applying the Ninth Circuit law, this court held that warnings of a lesser sanction are enough to meet the requirement of considering an alternate or a lesser sanction. And the court gave the appellant numerous warnings when it denied our motion for failure to prosecute. It warned that if the discovery, its order to comply by March 8th was not complied with, that it would dismiss the case. At the status conference held on April 15th.
I'm sorry, just to be clear, did the CFC say it would dismiss the case or it would consider dismissing the case?
I believe it said it would dismiss the case, Your Honor. And then during the status conference on April 15th, the court again warned a plaintiff, stating, if a pattern emerges where discovery is not being complied with and the court's orders are not being complied with, the court will entertain a motion to dismiss pursuant to Rules 16 and 37. That's in the record at pages 145 and 146. They received numerous warnings, and they still failed to comply with discovery. After more than a year, we didn't have any documents. We had simply a response that said that everything responsive is attached to our termination for convenience or cost proposal. But that, we did, just to correct what counsel said earlier, there were documents attached to that cost proposal, approximately 460 pages, which is approximately one ream of paper. But those were just things that supported their cause. What we were asking for in discovery were things that we're entitled to, things that might undercut their cause, communications with their subcontractors, emails, things like that. None of that was in there because that was simply documents to support their cause. And this court has considered a similar situation in a case called Caden Corporation versus the United States, which we cited in our brief, where the appellant pointed to various factors that the court should have considered, and this court stated in its opinion, those factors do not overcome the flagrant character of appellant's defaults that the record reveals, and they provide no basis for overturning the claims court dismissal of the complaint as an abuse of discretion. And that's really the question here is, did the trial court abuse its discretion in dismissing Intelligence complaint? And the record amply demonstrates that it did not. The facts are not in dispute. They're in the record. Most of the facts are in the appellant's brief as well. And so unless there are any other questions, I would just summarize by saying that because Intelligent failed to comply with the trial court's discovery orders, its dismissal was not an abuse of discretion in this court.
Can you just trace through for me the question I asked you before about if you don't do something, I will dismiss. Are you referring to Appendix 158? The December 16th, 2020 show cause order, or are you referring to something else?
No, I believe I am responding to claim, not to the show cause order.
Are you referring to 112, the February 2021 order on the motion to dismiss?
Yes.
Okay, and so where's the language that you are relying on? Just the last sentence?
The last sentence, okay. There it is, Your Honor.
I mean, the problem, it seems to me, is that this order, the sua sponte order of dismissal, was triggered by the failure to respond to the latest document production and the representations that would be compliance with it. And apparently the circumstance was such that the corporate officer in question was unable to do that because of health problems. And as I understand the law, you can't take that sanction of dismissal because somebody doesn't comply because of health problems. So it may have been that earlier it was a failure to comply and no health problem excuse, but the thing that triggered the dismissal here was an action that apparently was sought to be excused on health grounds, right?
Well, they didn't file anything about that until they filed the motion to stay, which was on June 10th, which was almost a month after they were supposed to comply with the discovery on May 15th. And they did attach a letter, it's not in the record, from a clinical psychologist, but all that letter stated was that the client was being treated for PTSD and depression. There was nothing about any of the other hospitalization or any of the statements made by counsel in previous filings. And there was, at that point, you know, they had already had 13 months to do this discovery, and the trial court did consider some of these challenges in page 4 of the appendix and the opinion and footnote 1, where the court dismissed the complaint. It did consider some of these problems and said that they basically don't make up for more than 14 months to provide discovery to the government.
But I thought most of that 14 months was subject to a variety of agreed continuances of the due date.
We agreed to several
150-day continuances that you agreed to.
150 days, that's correct, Your Honor. That's about 5 months.
Were there not subsequent agreements to extend due dates? I thought there was another 30-day and another 60-day.
There were no more agreements after that, Your Honor. That made the responses due in the middle of October. I didn't receive any responses in the middle of October. I had previously served discovery in September interrogatories and requests for admissions. Those were also due in October. I didn't receive any response to those. I sent him a letter saying, please respond to this discovery by November 5th. I didn't get a response to my letter. I then filed the motion to dismiss for failure to prosecute in mid-November, and then they didn't respond to that in December, and then the court entered the show cause order, and then they responded to it.
Would it be fair to say that the court's dismissal order, that an essential ingredient of that order was the failure to comply with this discovery request, which was sought to be excused by the hospitalization?
The reason that the trial judge dismissed the case was because she had entered orders and they weren't complied with.
But I don't think you're answering my question. What was this failure to comply because of the alleged hospitalization an essential ingredient of the decision to dismiss?
I don't believe so. They failed to comply with the March 8th order.
Well, that's your view. But, I mean, what is it? What is it in the order here that would support it on the ground that, well, I put aside the hospitalization problem, there was such an earlier failure to comply that I'm going to dismiss? I don't see that in the order. Is there some language in there that suggests that the earlier conduct was itself sufficient to support the dismissal?
Well, the court discussed the fact that it entered two orders and they
Sure, I understand that.
And the court discussed their problems in that footnote one on page four. But there's nothing in the record, no affidavit or anything saying that there was a hospitalization. And there was nothing, I should add, there was nothing for the trial court. The trial court didn't have any declarations or anything saying that the client was in the hospital or anything like that. All it had was statements of counsel that he had been hospitalized.
Had there been an actual motion to dismiss on this ground from you, perhaps such declarations might have been forthcoming.
That's possible, but the rules specifically allow the trial court to dismiss cases on its own motion when its orders are not being complied with.
Not because somebody's in the hospital.
Well, but as I said, she did wait until he filed the motion for stay. She had set the deadline of May 15th for them to provide the documents and conduct a search. Then on June 10th, he filed his motion to stay, and she had that before she dismissed the case later in the month of June.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Breedlove.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Plyshaker, you've got 2 minutes here.
Just very briefly, and let me say this. I quoted from the psychologist in the motion on the motion for stay. In the record, I did not attach, make sure that Exhibit A to that motion was attached. And if the court wishes, I can seek to supplement the appendix by supplying the court with the letter Exhibit A that was attached to that motion, which is the letter from the psychologist, which basically I just quoted in the motion.
Do you know that whether... That should be on the electronic docket in the Court of Federal Claims, and
that should be.
And would that be under seal or not?
No, it wasn't. I did not submit it under seal. It probably should have because it was medical information, but because of the time constraints, I went ahead and attached it. So yes, it should be in the record at the as an attachment at that level.
Did it talk about the hospitalization?
I'm sorry?
Did it talk about the hospitalization?
The meat of the letter is quoted. I think she just said he was under treatment. I don't know that she necessarily said that he was hospitalized in the VA hospital at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether he was hospitalized at the VA at that moment. At this point, I was just trying to find some medical documentation to verify his mental breakdown at that point in time. It's not in the record, but the delay between the May 14th day and the May 15th date and the time, the filing of my motion to stay was the time it took for me to try to get a letter from the treating psychologist documenting what was going on with my client. And within a few days of receiving that letter, that's when I filed the motion for stay supplemented with that document. And if I hadn't filed the motion for stay, I understand the court's frustration, believe me. And if I hadn't filed the motion for stay and had been given an opportunity to try to follow up and then didn't follow up with it with additional medical documentation, I could understand saying, look, you know, you haven't done your job. But all I was asking at that point in time was for additional time to try to document his situation so we could know whether we could go forward with this lawsuit and complete discovery or whether we were going to have to dismiss. And I believe the abuse of discretion was simply in not giving me that additional time, going ahead, ruling on it at that time without having an opportunity to fully consider the medical condition of my client.
Okay. Thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.